Avete ascoltato un programma di Radio Svizzera Internazionale. Il nostro indirizzo, Radio Svizzera Internazionale, programma in lingua italiana 3000 Verna 15 Svizzera. Le nostre trasmissioni proseguono in lingua inglese.
It's 4 hours coordinated universal time. Swiss Radio International is on the air to North America on 6.135, 9.650, 9.885, and 12.035 megahertz. Stay tuned for Dateline.
Hello and welcome. This is Paul Suffer with Comment in Current Affairs from Switzerland. I'll be back right after the news.
The United States President George Bush has told the exiled Emir of Kuwait, Sheikh Jaber al-Ahmed al-Sabah, that the U.S. will not rest until Iraqi forces are driven out of Kuwait. Mr. Bush said after a meeting with the Emir in Washington that they agreed that all options had to be kept open to ensure that the Iraqi occupation was ended and Kuwait's legitimate government was restored. The U.S. National Security Advisor, Brent Scowcroft, said after the meeting that the Emir had spoken of widespread destruction and looting in his country by Iraqi forces. Mr. Scowcroft said the destruction in Kuwait increased the need for an urgent solution to the crisis. Meanwhile, the five permanent members of the United Nations Security Council have issued a communique repeating their demand for an Iraqi withdrawal and the release of foreign hostages held by Iraqi forces. The foreign ministers of the five nations also said after a meeting in New York with the UN Secretary General, Javier Perez de Cuellar, that they would support moves towards a lasting and just peace in the Middle East. Officials said the communique did not mean that the five countries were seeking to link a solution to the Palestinian problem to the Gulf crisis. The Swiss Foreign Ministry has held a meeting in Bern with the families of around 80 Swiss citizens who are trapped in Iraq. Companies which employ some of the hostages were also represented at the meeting. A spokesman for the Foreign Ministry said all the Swiss currently detained in Baghdad were in good health and had not been harmed. He said the Swiss government was hoping Iraq would respond positively to the export of 17 million francs worth of medical supplies, but that there was no question of trading medical goods for exit visas. The International Energy Agency has called on its member countries to draw up plans for the release of strategic oil reserves in the event of any oil shortage caused by an escalation of the Gulf crisis. However, the IEA's governing board, meeting in Paris, did not ask its members to follow a decision by the United States to release some reserves onto the market now in order to slow the rise in oil prices. The organization, which groups 21 Western industrialized nations, said the oil supply situation was manageable but not comfortable. Oil prices have risen steeply since the Iraqi invasion of Kuwait and the subsequent UN embargo on imports of oil from Iraq and Kuwait. However, Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, and Venezuela have stepped up oil production to make up for most of the shortfall. You're listening to the news from Swiss Radio International. Reports from Liberia say fighting has broken out between government troops and forces loyal to one of the two rebel leaders, Prince Johnson, ending a six-day ceasefire in the country's civil war. In a pooled report from the Liberian capital, Monrovia, news agencies said the two sides exchanged artillery and machine gun fire for several hours. They said the fighting broke out on Thursday night after Prince Johnson's forces discovered a large government arms cache. Prince Johnson and his rival, the main rebel leader Charles Taylor, declared a ceasefire last Saturday. The presidents of Argentina and Venezuela have signed a trade agreement designed to end trade tariffs between their countries by the end of 1995. President Carlos Menem of Argentina and the Venezuelan President Los Andres Perez signed the agreement during Mr. Menem's two-day visit to Venezuela. They said in a joint statement that tariffs would be cut immediately by 40% and negotiators would meet in November to work on further details of the accord. The Nicaraguan government has announced a series of measures aimed at easing the burden of its economic austerity program after talks with representatives of the left-wing Sandinist opposition. The presidency minister, Antonio Lacayo, said the measures included the suspension of plans to dismiss up to 25,000 state employees, lower water and electricity bills for the poor, and distribution of free food in some areas. The opposition has threatened a campaign of protests and civil disobedience over the austerity program, which is aimed at cutting government spending and tackling an inflation rate of more than 3,000%. Reports from the Dominican Republic say three people have been killed in clashes between police and demonstrators during a three-day general strike against the government's economic policies. At least 300 people have been arrested since the strike began on Wednesday. Reports say there have been sporadic clashes, looting, and arson attacks. The Swiss national airline, Swissair, has decided to order 26 European Airbuses for its short-haul fleet, with options on a further 26. The order, worth an estimated 2.3 thousand million francs, is the biggest in the airline's history. Swissair said it would buy 7 A320 Airbuses with 133 seats and 19 A321s with 170 seats. The first airliner is expected to be in operation by 1995. The number of foreigners living in Switzerland reached a record level in August. The Justice Ministry said nearly 1,072,000 foreign citizens were living in Switzerland, 16% of the total population. This represents an increase of nearly 5% on figures recorded last year. The figure does not include seasonal workers, asylum seekers, and international representatives. Now to end the news, the main points again. President Bush has told the exiled Emir of Kuwait that the U.S. will not rest until Iraqi forces are driven out of Kuwait. The International Energy Agency has called on its members to draw up plans for the release of oil reserves. Reports from Liberia say fighting has broken out between government troops and forces loyal to the rebel leader, Prince Johnson. And that was the news from Switzerland.
Thank you very much. This is Paul Suffren back with the rest of Dateline. In this program, the Swiss view of the Children's Summit at the United Nations in New York, an appeal for Switzerland to join the European community. The Swiss national airline Swissair makes changes in its administration and fleet, and we'll be hearing about a gathering in Locarno of the scientific community to discuss climate change. Heads of state and foreign ministers from 60 countries meet this weekend at the United Nations in New York for the first Children's Summit. Switzerland will be represented by its foreign minister, René Felber, and the ambassador to the Swiss Observer Mission to the United Nations, Dieter Chesnau-Répon. Laurie Heber asked Mr. Chesnau-Répon what world leaders hope to accomplish during the 2 days of talks.
This meeting's main aim is to draw the attention of the world to the global misery of children everywhere, or nearly everywhere. You know that about 40,000 children die every day.
So what can be done in 2 days exactly? Isn't that too short a time period?
Very little, of course. I think, like always in these high-level conferences, a document which the Secretariat has prepared will be discussed and signed, and that document should trigger off a program which has to extend about several years, of course, in order to improve the situation of children. The best we could hope is that through that meeting, additional pressure will be exerted upon governments to take the children's misery more seriously. The problem is, of course, very difficult to solve because the children are worst off in countries which are the poorest, and these countries have a number of high priorities which they have to decide upon themselves. But the psychological pressure will be there, and that's already something.
Now, we know that, for example, debt is one of the economic factors which strangles the economies of these poorer countries. Do you think that there'll be anything concrete done, for example, about debt alleviation, which might eventually help the children?
That is right. I mean, the debt alleviation is another very important topic discussed within the United Nations and elsewhere. It has no direct connection with this Children's Summit, but everybody in the industrial world is aware that there is no chance of helping the poorest countries, including their children, without strong effort in debt alleviation, and these efforts are being undertaken now.
Mr. Chenot-Répond, what is Switzerland's position in this meeting?
Switzerland is, for the use of just this meeting, contributing 50,000 Swiss francs. This is not very much, but it has to be seen as part of our more than 16 million Swiss francs, which we have donated to UNICEF, United Nations Children's Fund, this year. Switzerland is one of the biggest, I think it's the 12th biggest contributor in absolute figures to UNICEF.
Could you tell us in particular terms what Switzerland does for children? If anything, does it have special aid programs designed directly to help children?
We do this all through UNICEF. So Switzerland has no bilateral aid to children. We have a bilateral technical assistance in many countries. And in these countries, very often children indirectly profit from this bilateral aid.
Are you very confident that something substantial, something concrete will come out of this children's summit?
Frankly speaking, I don't remember summits as such to have produced great results by themselves. But I am confident that since this meeting was also convened by heads of state of developing countries, they mean it serious and they are totally aware of this growing problem which sometimes takes desperate proportions, and something will have to be done, that is for sure.
Ambassador Dito Chenot-Répond in New York. Switzerland must join the European community or risk losing its negotiating strength, says the Swiss parliamentarian Gianfranco Cotti. Mr. Cotti is president of a committee set up to launch a people's initiative for Swiss membership of the EC. Switzerland and other members of the European Free Trade Association are currently negotiating the creation of a European economic space. As Mr. Cotti told Julie Hunt, he sees this as a first necessary step towards Switzerland becoming a full member of the EC.
Today we have a strength of negotiation that we may use because we export a lot to EC and import lots to EC. But in 10 years from now, we could find ourselves in a weaker situation. I can imagine that EC is going to grow, is going to get stronger. It is going also to practice a certain kind of protectionism. And so we would be in a situation where we couldn't export anymore. If something like that happens, our economy is going to lose.
Isn't it enough for Switzerland to become a member of the European economic space, something that's being negotiated between EFTA countries and the EEC at the moment?
Well, the European space, we have to do it. My opinion is we have to do it. We have to do all what we can to get this acquis communautaire. Acquis communautaire is the number of rules we have to accept to be a member. And acquis of a space economic Europe is the number of rules we need to accept to be admitted to the space economic Europe.
The problem is that there are lots of rules we will have to accept that the Swiss people don't like.
Some Swiss do not like to accept certain rules, but we have to consider the global relationship between EC and Switzerland, and I think if we make a balance, we only have to win out of it.
Now let's look at the individual regulations that Switzerland will have to accept if it does become a member of the EC. I understand that two of them are that they will have to allow a certain number of foreign workers in their country, and the other thing is that it will compromise their agricultural policy, and it could mean lots of farmers losing their jobs.
Well, we have to have some exceptions because we cannot accept all the foreigners that want to come to Switzerland, but I believe that EC is going to accept those kinds of exceptions. Agriculture is not a problem between EC and Switzerland. It is a problem concerning got.
The general agreements on tariffs and trade.
Yes, we are going to accept to discuss about agriculture. We know that we have to change our agriculture politics.
How much support do you have for the initiative already?
The mentality is changing very fast. When we started with our idea to adhere to EC, almost nobody took us seriously. But now I think they are a very strong part of the Swiss citizens, believing that they have to go ahead.
But don't you think at the end of the day people will be worried about losing their federal system, being absorbed into this huge machine which is the EEC?
Neutrality is no more a problem since the two blocks are disappeared. The other problems concern the referendum and the federalism. But you have to consider that we cannot get an island with around us a lot of people working together.
So you've got to work in harmony with the rest of Europe. There is no choice for the future.
In the future, our negotiation strength would be very low levels.
Gianfranco Cotti, a Christian Democrat member of parliament from Locarno. Two items of news now concerning Switzerland's ailing national airline, Swissair. One is the announcement that the company has decided to buy 26 Airbuses for its European fleet. It's the biggest order in the 60-year history of Swissair. The first Airbuses should be ready for operation in January 1995. The other news item concerns changes in Swissair administration. Hannes Götz has been nominated as chairman of the board to replace Armin Baltensweiler. The nomination of Mr. Götz has to be approved at a Swissair shareholders meeting, but Sepp Moser, the aviation correspondent for Die Weltwoche newspaper, says there's no doubt it will be accepted. The main task of Mr. Götz will be to rebuild Swissair from the ground up. I ask Sepp Moser what's involved in rebuilding.
Well, you know, Swissair once was a leading airline, internationally leading airline, and it is no longer. It has lost clout, it has lost its leading position in product quality, it has the wrong organization, and one of the most important things, the motivation of its people has never been so low as it is now.
Why is that?
Well, you know, Swissair maybe for a too long a period has been too self-satisfied and too close to any criticism. And I mean, my opinion is that this hurts now.
What is Mr. Götz going to have to do to change this?
He will have to do a lot. He will certainly have to set up a new organization for Swissair, set up a holding company which consists of all the departments which are now under the umbrella of Swissair, the airline. He will have to change that. He will have to bring new people into the management. Many of these people have lost confidence of their subordinates. He will have to do a lot to bolster the motivation of the 20,000 people who make up Swissair.
Is this going to affect Swissair service around the world?
I hope it will affect it because they lose ground every week now. And this is very dangerous if you look at the developments in Europe. Switzerland is not a part of the European community, and Swissair runs the danger of being closed out of a large proportion of the market. And if they want to counter this danger, they have to act swiftly and fast and now.
Internal restructuring, then?
Yes, among other things. And the most important thing is motivation of the people.
What is Mr. Goethe's previous experience in motivating people and turning in rebuilding companies?
Well, just look at what he has done in the last 7 years at Georg Fischer, which is a machine tools company. And he went there in 1983, and the company was in shambles. They were losing money. They were losing their position in the marketplace. The motivation was low. And he turned it around. Georg Fischer is healthy again. People work. People know what they work for. I hope he will do the same thing at Swissair.
He has the personality, then, to motivate people.
Yes, he has proved that at Georg Fischer. He is not a very outspoken person. He's rather quiet. But he knows what he wants, and he gets it done.
What happens if he doesn't succeed, though, in Switzerland?
Yes, I hope he will succeed. That's my only answer I can give to that.
If you were to compare the decision by Swissair to buy these Airbuses and the choice of Mr. Götz, what would you say was more important?
Götz's choice.
But in the light of Swiss Air problems, do you not think it was a mistake to invest so much money in Airbuses?
Certainly not. I mean, it's never bad to invest money in good production tools, which give you an advantage in the marketplace. The Airbus airplanes are very modern, very economical, and ideal for Swiss Air's network, and I think it's never bad to invest in the future.
So basically, then, one decision does not offset the other?
Absolutely not.
Sepp Moser of the Zurich Weekly, Die Weltwoche. 120 scientists from 15 countries have just ended a five-day meeting in the southern Swiss canton of Locarno, which examined changes in the world's climate. The conference was organized by ProClean, an organization based in Bern that coordinates international research into the issue. Peter Capella asked the director of ProClean, Terry Kelp, what the meeting of minds produced.
This meeting, of course, as all scientific meetings, produced a lot of controversy. Ideas were presented, new hypotheses, and new data, which created quite a stir. One can say that the scientific look at the past cannot function as an analogy for the future predicted by global climate warming due to greenhouse effects. We can also say that the past does not provide evidence at the moment of this human-induced change.
Many parts of Europe have just experienced one of the hottest summers on record, and the previous winter, particularly in Switzerland, was also very mild. There's some concern that such wide fluctuations in the climate are increasing. Can they simply be put down to environmental problems, or is it a part of the weather's natural cycle?
Well, we cannot say whether it is part of the weather's natural cycle. What we can say is that the variability of the past shows that such variability is also possible in a natural system. However, there has been evidence that the last 3 years in a row of such unusual weather is now moving statistically out of the framework of past variability, and that these three unusual years put us somewhere in the frame of the first time this has happened in the last 700 years of history. What the past record does show us, however, that the natural system is capable of producing sudden changes in the climate regime, let's say in Europe, on the order of 4 to 5 degrees within 20 to 30 years, so that you can have natural variability at the same scale. That is why we cannot provide evidence for human-induced change. Either kinds of change, of course, are of importance to humanity.
Is it possible to say that we are affecting our climate?
The members of the conference agreed that while we don't want to be alarmist, there is certainly a reason for concern, because what we are experimenting with the climate now, and we know that adding CO2 and other trace gases to the atmosphere will have effects on climate, what it shows is that these changes can be happening on thresholds. In other words, we may inadvertently push the climate system over the threshold and reach a new kind of stability. What this meeting shows very clearly is that the past record has these what we call oscillations, where within a few tens of years, the climate system, based on the changes in the ocean system, moves back and forth between two states which apparently are stable. And these two states can switch over very quickly, but that effect, while natural, can be human-induced as well, and therefore it provides a dangerous signal that one should be very concerned to learn what these past changes really mean.
Do you understand properly what these past changes mean?
Not at all. In fact, as this meeting showed very clearly, as we move into the scales of change on the range of 10 to 20 to 30 years, we have absolutely no clear mechanism at the moment in the natural system that you can provide a single equation.
And finally, what would be the message from the scientific community ahead of next month's government conference on environmental issues in Geneva?
If we see that if we are pushing, let's say, the future in a gradual increase of CO2, a gradual increase of the greenhouse effect, that by no means does that mean we are going to see a gradual increase in any weather parameter. We're very much more likely to see very sudden changes. Much of the World Climate Conference is aimed at implicitly at this idea of gradual change. But we are much more concerned with the past, which tells us that the natural system responds in big steps and big jumps.
That was Terry Kelp, the director of the Bern-based Climate Research Institute, ProClean. One of the debates in the Swiss House of Representatives this week had an obvious point. It concerned the future of a government-sponsored vaccination program for children. Peter Heller reports on the efforts of one member to needle Parliament into doing away with the program.
In 1987, the Swiss health authorities adopted a plan worked out by the World Health Organization to eradicate measles, German measles, and mumps. By means of a three-in-one vaccination, children all over Switzerland were to be protected from these illnesses, which usually strike in pre-teenage years. Parallel schemes have been running in Europe and the United States. In the meantime, the ambitious plans to eliminate these illnesses by the year 2000 have run into trouble. In the United States, the vaccinations are thought to have caused measles epidemics. But in fact, from the very beginning, there were physicians in many countries who were skeptical about the idea. Rudolf Hafner, a Green member of the Federal Parliament in Bern, has now tried to get the vaccination scheme stopped. He quoted Critical Medical Opinion, which says that measles, mumps, and German measles are eminently useful diseases for children to overcome because they strengthen the immune system. He also quoted 180 Swiss medical practitioners who say a three-in-one vaccination is basically an overkill because girls do not need protection from mumps and boys don't need protection against German measles. Mr. Hafner alleged that the vaccination campaign was not democratic and had no legal basis, and that in the USA, where 95% of the population had been vaccinated, measles epidemics were causing 10 times more deaths than before the campaign. Another environmentalist MP claimed that the vaccination campaign would weaken children's immune system and that ultimately youngsters would be like the many plants whose resistance has been broken through overuse of pesticides. These arguments, however, did not convince the majority of the House. The president of the Preparatory Commission, which worked out the majority standpoint, said the advantages of the vaccinations overcame the shortcomings, and that thus the campaign is justified. The initiative against the vaccinations was referred to as a matter of faith, and that ultimately it remained up to parents to decide if their children were to be inoculated or not. The initiative was rejected by 84 to 25 votes.
That was a report by SRI parliamentary correspondent Peter Heller. It brings us around to the end of another Dateline program. We'll be back again tomorrow, same time, same frequencies. Paul Suffren here. Have a good weekend, everyone. Thank you.